just make sure that this side is playing. I think it's okay to continue now. Outside of the clergy... Oh, okay. Right, okay. I'm sorry.
Because you asked me what it was like to grow up the only Jewish boy in my class in high school. There were two Jewish girls. I think there were two in the year behind me and two in the year behind them. So, Bob Fruerman was 2 years behind me. And in the days of Hitler, there was a kind of pain in being in a totally non-Jewish environment, in that before people knew what the Holocaust was, except the Jews suspected what it was, things were said by Gentile children, not said to hurt you, but said like kids want you to know they're there, and they want to say something that'll make an impression. They want to say something to get attention. They make remarks about Hitler that were kind. It would hurt deeply. I have never forgotten who the kids were who said these things. And while it's true that I don't think for a minute that they were Nazis, not for a minute, I could never forget it because I was hurt so bad.
You had some awareness then of what was going on.
I heard you're in class having a discussion. The kid makes a remark.
No, I mean, you were aware of what was going on in terms of the Holocaust.
In our house, you were plenty aware. You were plenty aware because my father's brothers and sisters were murdered by Hitler.
And he knew this at the time?
I mentioned earlier that my father had a radical background in Europe.
Right.
They were members of the Jewish Labor Federation known as the Bund. The Bund in Poland had its own underground. Okay. As a matter of fact, when the first meeting was held to plan the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, there were six men involved in it, and the man who was chosen to be the executive secretary was a first cousin of mine.
What was his name?
Of Russia Bloom. His mother was my father's sister. He perished near the end of the war, but his family survived. Fantastic people. And they're all out of there now, but only very recently. Through that underground, we would get mysterious phone calls that would tell us so and so. We got a phone call once from Shanghai, China. A woman in Brooklyn got a phone call from Shanghai, China, that someone in Shanghai got a phone call that a cousin of my father's had been seen in Italy. He was all right. We don't know who these people were. And so we got the word that my father's sister, Shana, was killed. And now I forget the name of the place. I know that in Grodno, that was my father's brother, Bandit, for whom I named my children. And Shana was killed. She was at like 80 years old, dug her own grave in the snow. Thank you. So we were getting these stories, and
So it was not what you were reading in newspapers or seeing in newsreels, but it was through this underground that you had a more complete picture of the Holocaust.
You must understand that before Hitler went into Poland, the day that he went into Poland, you know, I remember my father crying because there is an awful lot of Jews there, it's going to be terrible. But before Hitler went into Poland, we were anti-Nazis. Because people on the left were anti-Nazi.
What happened to your father's political activism during that time?
Okay. We were in New York. Mother and Daddy and I and my sister and brother, and I believe, you can check this and I'm sure you will, that this was the weekend of the world premiere of The Wizard of Oz. And we went to see Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland at the Capitol Theater. And as we came out, at Times Square, they were flashing the news that Hitler and Stalin had made a non-aggression pact. And from then on, Daddy was different. Okay? I remember what he said to my uncle in Pittsburgh when we got back. He said, "I don't have to believe the bad things that somebody says about another human being, but if you see two people walking down the street arm in arm, you believe they're friends." And so it was, you could describe it in terms of the title of a book that you may have read called The God That Failed. It was as though he had been let down, personally. Nevertheless, those of his family who survived World War II survived by walking into communist Russia. Okay? And I mean deep into Russia. We have cousins living in Asia now, near the border of Iran. I corresponded with an aunt of mine, my father's sister, but she would never give me the names and addresses of her children.
Why do you suppose that was? She was protecting
them? Well, she's
them?
An old lady. She's going to die anyhow.
Yeah.
But, you know, just because it's okay now, 10 years from now, who knows? You know, with those people, what can happen.
So you've never met these people?
No, it was one of the dreams of my life. One of the dreams of my life was that someday I would go there and meet them. But I know it. And, you know, this is a funny thing. It was about the time I came to McKeesport, which is now 13 years, that my cousin Lee Horvitz and I founded Pittsburgh Voice for Soviet Jewry to awaken the Jewish community of Pittsburgh to what was happening. And I got this address of my aunt, and I wasn't dumb enough to thought I'm a rabbi. You know, who knows what jackass is going to read it. I went to a Russian priest and had him translate my letter into Russian. I told her I was a teacher, and my wife is a teacher. And he typed it on a typewriter so no censor could have trouble reading it. And she wrote back to me, "I can see from what you say that you are a very spiritual person."
Isn't that interesting?
In other words, the family has a way of communicating things, and God knows what it is. Now I remember, the way I came to write to her, how I got her address. We have cousins in Poland. We have cousins in Israel. The cousins in Poland could communicate freely with the cousins in Russia. Their mail is not held up. Israel can communicate with Poland, but not with Russia. So the cousin in Israel gets a letter from the cousin in Poland that a cousin in Russia was put in a mental institution. They want to know, is he really sick or is he politically active? So they know they can't find out from Israel, and they ask me to find out. So I start feeling out my aunt. They sent me the address in Russia. I started feeling out my aunt. She sent me the nicest letters. And all we did was, we sent her presents, you know. But I never did find out anything, and I don't know. She just mentioned once that so-and-so has a child who is sick, and maybe that's what she was telling me. And then the letters just stopped coming, but she was a very old lady. Remember, she had gotten married almost to the day the same time as my mother and father. So mother, although she had never met these people, had a lot of feeling.
What happened after you graduated from, is there anything else you want to tell us about living in Rochester? About your social life?
Okay, yeah, I do. I really do. I really do want to tell you about that.
Okay.
In those days, you couldn't join the AZA until you were a sophomore in high school. And that was really a big deal, because they had a basketball team. And the first time I was ever in the city of McKeesport in the building which I now serve as rabbi was when I came with the Beaver Falls AZA to play basketball in a tournament in that building. We came by train from Beaver Falls to Pittsburgh and by streetcar from Pittsburgh to McKeesport.
It was a trek.
And we were all ineligible. We were all ringers. And that was my year on the Pitt basketball team, so I wasn't eligible to play for AZA. And every one of us, Milton Harris was on the Geneva team, and it would go through it one by one, each of the guys.
The Milton reason. Harris who went on to be
this fellow's still alive.
Oh, a different.
Yeah. But each of us, in our own way, was TREFA. And we didn't win the tournament either. McKeesport was worse. They were using Goyim altogether. We were just using ineligible Jews to play basketball. They used a guy who was so good, he later became the coach at McKeesport High School. And he jokes about his AZA days. He was never a Jew. So that was McKeesport. No wonder they were so good. My Jewish social life, my social life, actually, I had as a high school kid, centered around the kids I knew in the Sunday Religious School in Beaver Falls, in the AZA. Every month or so, we went out of town for some AZA function, and that's where I met kids who were my lifelong friends, and... now I see those people only when I go back home to bury them with my friends. That's it. And I think my wife really doesn't grasp this because she grew up in Pittsburgh where everyone was Jewish. And for her to understand what it would be to be the only Jewish boy in your class in high school and to have a real good friend of a kid who was the only Jewish student in Monaca High School. Okay, and so it was. Then after dating, I dated Jewish girls. There's a great story on this, okay?
Was that because of your parents that you did that, or your own philosophy?
It's very hard for me to know. There are a lot of things involved in it. One is, I didn't want to hurt my parents. I really didn't want to hurt them. Two, I wouldn't do anything to hurt the Jewish people. I wouldn't... I didn't go out with girls who weren't eligible for marriage. No. After the war, one day when I was still in the motion picture business, Thursday was my day off, and I was going to Erie to visit my cousin Leonard there. He was a newspaper editor there.
Is that another Leonard Winograd?
Leonard Kolis, K-H-O-L-O-S. And we're good friends, even if we are cousins. And I saw this girl who used to be one of the young girls in the neighborhood. And she was that Irish, Catherine O'Connor. Lovely people. They lived a couple doors away from us, but she was about 8 years younger than myself. And now it's years later, and we're both fully grown. And I saw her on the corner, and I didn't know her, and she told me who she was. And I said, listen, I'm going to Erie to visit my cousin. Why don't you come along for the ride? She says, great. So, said, I have to go to the hospital and sign out. She was a nurse. She did. I picked her up there. We went to Erie, had a lovely time. In the morning, my father said to me, Leonard, I understand you were out with a Gentile girl yesterday. You know I don't care, but your mother's very upset. I don't know how she found that. Does this answer your question? I want to say that the relationship between Jews and Gentiles was significantly different. Okay? That there were vast areas in which we really didn't know each other. And there were prejudices of parents from Europe. A high percentage of the people who were my... All right.
Okay, we had another interruption with the phone.
It not only was there ignorance of one another, but there was no Israel. Jews did not have the heroic position in society that we have today with Gentiles. You didn't have the active work in churches for understanding of Jews. The attitude of the Pope and the Catholic Church was different toward Jews. It was really a much different world for a Jewish child, and much easier for a Jewish child not to intermarry. Today, it's harder in many respects after you create an open society to tell your children not to participate. It doesn't make a great deal of sense. And so you have to try to bring some kind of common sense into it. Because you know that this world really is a different world. I went to college, I commuted to Pitt. Everybody else did. It was depression time, and I was glad to get there.
What years was this, Rabbi?
I graduated high school in May 1940. And I went to Pitt for a couple years, then I enlisted in the Air Force before I was of draft age. I really wanted to go to war to fight Hitler. I really did.
Did this involve your parents signing since you enlisted when you were underage?
No, I wasn't that young. Okay? Maybe they did. I don't know. I could have gotten them to do it anyhow. It wasn't like joining the Marines. You know, it was such a boyish outfit. I'd go to the Air Force where the Jewish boys went.
Oh, but, really?
Yes. were you a Marine?
No, I was not a Marine.
Was he? All right. So I know Ralph Kaplan was a Marine, but in order to do it, he told his parents they were signing a paper for him to join the Naval Reserve. Great way to fool your parents. They played a great trick on them. And in that period, there were a lot of nice kids riding those trains every morning back and forth from Pittsburgh. And we became good friends on those trains, lifelong friends.
How long a ride was it?
Okay, about an hour to Pittsburgh, or 45 minutes to Pittsburgh from Rochester, and about a half an hour from north side of Pittsburgh out to the campus. And
what were you studying at that point?
I studied business administration, and it was incredibly dull. I don't think I ever took one course that I was interested in those 4 years.
Were you picking this so that you could follow your father in the movie business?
No, that wasn't what I wanted to do. I was just learning business because people told me to. What I wanted to do was to write. And people told me you can't make a living writing. And I believed them. And then, you know, fate is so funny. I was in the service and I came back. I was one of the first fellows that came back. And I did very well when I came back in biz ed. So there were a couple of jobs open, and I was told I could have those jobs. One was with an accounting firm, and one was to be the assistant advertising director of an oil company. Now, who knew that someday oil was going to dominate the entire known world and most of the unknown world? You know, who knew? So I come home, you know, I come home to change clothes, and I tell my mother that I've got an interview with such and such a company to be assistant advertising manager. I did like advertising. And she talked to Daddy, you know, if he's worth money to total strangers, he must be worth more to us. And but did anybody dare to dream, you know, in 1946 what oil would be someday?
Just to interrupt you,
yes, dear.
Growing up, what were your impressions? You said you used to come on Sundays to Pittsburgh to your uncle's.
Okay.
What did you know about Pittsburgh? What was it like in Pittsburgh that you remember?
I was a, like any other boy growing up in America, I was a big fan of the Pitt football team. Okay, and basketball and baseball. We didn't see much of Pittsburgh. We went out to West Liberty. Do you know where that is? Brookline. Okay, that's where my aunt and uncle lived. And we stayed the whole day. I would play old phonograph records all day, read the New York Times Sunday edition, read the Encyclopedia Britannica, and I had a wonderful time and listened to the people talking. And people came in and out of the house all day long and talked. The few times that I went to see my parents, my mother's relatives, would be like for Seder. And before the Rochester Shul was built, we came in for the high holidays. I also remember that it was a time when people didn't really ask little kids what they thought about anything. And I didn't think that my opinion was of any particular importance.
What about when you came into Pittsburgh, you said there were a lot of political discussions in the afternoon. You almost described it as a salon kind of
kitchen.
Kitchen, okay.
Warm
about
kitchen next to a grocery store where I could go out into the grocery store like 10 years of age and take a bottle of beer and drink it. That was great.
What about political activities in Pittsburgh that your parents might have?
The only thing that I ever went to, I went a couple of times to radical meetings with my father, Jewish meetings.
Radical Jewish
meetings. And if you want to know what those meetings looked like, you go see the movie Reds. But there's a lot of noise and disagreement and hair splitting and that kind of stuff, okay? Except that I think you had to have a Jewish accent to get in. All right?
Okay. Sorry,
Jewish. No.
Actually, you skipped some years. You told us that you signed up for the Air Force, and then you talked again about being back at Pitt after the Air Force. We've got that whole hiatus there.
I went to Pitt, and I gravitated toward small-town Jewish boys who to whom dietary laws were important. So that once I was told that the SAM house bought only kosher meat, I didn't really want to hear about the other fraternities. Because they didn't. Okay? I'm not saying they weren't nice people, because they're all the same people. They're the same people. So then I went to SAM, and I finally pledged, moved into the house, and I couldn't join. I couldn't join because this was wartime, and I felt that I should be buying government bonds to support the war effort, and I knew I wasn't doing it. If I wasn't doing that, I shouldn't be spending money to join a fraternity. Now, that's the reason I never joined the fraternity, although most of those fellows to this day think that I was a member. I never did go through. And I lived in the house, I think, for 6 weeks, and it was 6 weeks of ping pong and beer and not doing any schoolwork at all. And I was a kid who was used to working and going to school and getting nice enough grades with very little effort. So I started working when I was 12 years of age in the family business. And I was accustomed to getting good grades and working and commuting. And here I was living a few blocks away from the cathedral and just having a blast and not getting my schoolwork done. And I also saw fellows like myself who were seniors who did not have the credits to graduate, and I sure didn't want to be like that. So I left. And as I say, to this day, some of my closest friends, the people who call me from other towns to marry their children, are boys from that fraternity. Friends. Okay, you say, what is the part that I skipped?
Well, the whole war. Experience in the war, in service.
Well, I worked hard, very, very hard physically, in basic training to get into condition. I enjoyed showing off marching through the streets in my uniform, which we did a lot. Aviation cadets did a lot like that.
Where were you stationed at the beginning?
Well, first at Miami Beach. And if there is such a thing as feeling that you are really wonderful and doing something perfect with your life, it was being a Jew and being in the Air Force in World War II. You really felt that you were doing the greatest thing a person could do, and you were just about the greatest thing a guy could do. Because I didn't expect to come back, but it was so unimportant. I always thought of myself...
You did not expect to come back.
No, I don't think any others did.
Really?
Not when you knew the statistics of the thing. I always thought of myself as standing between Hitler and my mother and father. And when I was in navigation school, as God would have it, one of the instructors there was the fellow who had been my debating colleague in high school. His father was a Salvation Army major. And he came to me to tell me that, when I graduate, if I wanted it, he would have me put in a non-combatant unit, the Air Transport Command. And I said, no, that's not what I wanted. But I really wanted to fight against Hitler. And I thought that in that respect, the war was a very wonderful thing for a person like myself, compared with the fellow who had no idea what he was doing there, and who was just as frightened as I was. I don't want you to think I wasn't frightened. Nobody could have been more scared than I was. But every time we went down the bomb run, I would have to turn up my electric suit so high, and I was still shaking with cold, because I know what it means to really be scared. I was scared, and but as I've taught my children, courage is when you're terrified and you still do what's right. Courage is not the jackass who doesn't have enough sense to be frightened. So.